the name of God, the merciful, the compassionate. Hello and welcome to Pure Home with me, Sahar Haqju. Well, we wonder, in non-Islamic societies and Western societies, are the youth stuck to the bad conventions and they're tired of this limbo? So today we'll discuss whether they're rebelling against this bad conventions or not. Stay with us to discuss that, and of course we'll have other topics, we'll have our story, we'll have a report, a clip from here and there, and much more. So don't go away. Welcome back. Well, there's no doubt that in this new generation, in this age, it's very difficult to be good. There's a lot of rebelling against these bad conventions, but a lot of the time people go with the flow and they're stuck in that limbo, in that very difficult situation. We'll have a guest speaker to help us better delve and understand this topic. And so you'll want to stick with us, but first we'll go and listen to our story and we'll be back.
Forgiving enemies. When the Prophet, peace be upon him, conquered Mecca with 12,000 armed forces in a way that Mecca residents did not realize his entrance to the city, he treated people so kindly and affectionately that is astonishing and matchless in the history. It is unbelievable that the victorious warrior treat the defeated side in this way. Residents of Mecca were standing in Masjid al-Haram and waiting for the leader of Islam and Muslims to come out to Kaaba and announce his decree to the people of Mecca, who had caused the worst possible troubles to him during the past 13 years. The Prophet, who had an amazing military power, could have considered a severe punishment for the people of Mecca and could have asked his 12,000 men who were armed to teeth to implement it. When he came out of Kaaba after breaking the idols, he addressed the residents of Mecca and said, "O people, you were bad relatives and bad neighbors to me. You drove me out of the city and then followed me with your armies and attacked me unfairly. You did not hesitate in causing me troubles and exiling and killing my friends. You killed my uncle, Hamza. You did all this to me, who am the messenger of God. Undoubtedly, I have the right to retaliate. Based on this right, your men must be killed, and your women and children must be taken captive. Your houses must be destroyed, and your properties must be taken by the victorious group. But I leave it up to you to issue a decree. What do you say, and what do you think?" Suhail ibn Amr, said on behalf of others, "We talk friendly and think friendly. You are our magnanimous and forgiving brother, and now you have gained power over us." Hearing this, the Prophet, peace be upon him, felt compassion in his heart, and his eyes was filled with tears. When they saw him like this, people of Mecca started crying. Then the Prophet said, "I'll say the same thing that my brother Joseph said. May God bless you, and he is the kindest."
Welcome back. Well, we're honored to have Ms. Samana Madani here with us. Ms. Madani has an MA in English Literature. She also works with various cultural institutes, as well as cooperation in making a documentary called The End of Times. She has translated articles and books, including Who Will Rock the Cradle, Girls Gone Mild, and A Return to Modesty. Hello, welcome to the program, Ms. Madani.
Hello. Nice to meet you here.
Okay, so let's get right into our discussion. We want to speak about this modesty and maybe perhaps people rebelling against this new, the bad conventions or whatnot. So why is it so difficult to be good in this age? And is there a difference between shame and modesty?
Well, in the name of God, the Merciful and the Compassionate, I would like to start my speech, talk with a book from Wendy Shalit. And actually, I'm mostly going to give examples from her book. It's called Girls Gone Mild. Young women reclaim self-respect and find it's not bad to be good. And in fact, first, she starts talking about something called pluralistic ignorance. And it's somehow talking about how it's bad to be good in the modern times, you know, how difficult it is to be good in the modern times. For example, she says that this phenomenon of being good is called pluralistic ignorance, a wonderful term coined by Floyd Allport in 1924. And then she goes on to explain what it means. She says, it's what happens when individuals in a group each imagine that their private feelings or judgments diverge from the norm, mm-hmm. and but they nonetheless conform to that norm. Why? Because they want to be seen as a desirable member of the group. And each person believes that others have a certain way because they truly want to, when in fact everyone else also has private qualms about the norm. In other words, people are under peer pressure. And it's not only about teenagers or about kids, it's also the adults. For example, me myself have seen some housewives who just want to put their children in kindergarten or in daycare just because, you know, their friends have done so, because and they feel that if they don't do so, their children don't become socialized. Mm-hmm. And as you said, one of my translations was a work by several psychologists, and they proved that daycare has a very bad impact on children from different views. And they say that the first 3 or 4 years, the base of personality of a person is established and shaped. And in fact, they say even if the mother is so poor and cannot gain enough money, it's better to put the baby with the grandparents, not mm-hmm. in a daycare center, even if it's the best center, mm-hmm. because in fact they cannot provide enough emotion, enough love for the child. You know, we are mothers. You know, mm-hmm. you're a mother, I'm a mother. We sometimes even are tired of, you know, taking care of only one child. How mm-hmm. how is it so? You know, in a daycare center, there are so many children, so many different characters, and it's difficult for, you know, for the person who is in charge of them.
So basically, that lack of emotion that's being, exactly. or that care that's being offered to that child outweighs, I mean, a lot of us. Personally, I thought maybe if a child is social, you think it's okay because they'll enjoy all the toys and all the kids to play with. But do you have to weigh it out and say which one is more important?
And this is just one example, you know. And Chalice goes on to say, everyone swims. I really like this sentence, you know. It says, everyone swims towards the norm and imagines that others are having a great time, when in fact many are drowning, you mm-hmm. know. And in fact, she talks about modesty, and for example, she is talking about how girls, they are under pressure to look sexy, and consider how girls today need to be thin, available, and always sexy. At the same time, they're supposed to have no hopes, no messy feelings, no vulnerability. They must be aggressive, yet somehow inviting. It's complicated, and to rebel against the new bad girl script takes enormous confidence, but as I learned, it can be done. And then she goes on to say that tradition is counted as something bad, even if it's good. You know, nowadays people say tradition is not good mm-hmm. for different reasons, which we are going to talk about later. And you said, what is the difference between shame and modesty? Mm-hmm. In fact, a person who is modest has a very high self-confidence, mm-hmm. in contrast to what, you know, what we might believe. A person who is modest is a person who values herself, his or herself, because modesty is not only for women. Mm-hmm. And when you actually believe that you have a self, which we talked about in the previous session a few months ago, that how, you know, complicated this self is, and when you value this self, then you will not just you know, put it on exhibition. And later I'm gonna give you examples of how teenagers, American teenagers, now they're becoming tired of all this, you know, of all this exposition of the body, and they say that our thought and our self is more important than this body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. So basically, the modesty is, I think, for anyone who truly understands the exactly. term, has a positive connotation, because mm-hmm. it's truly out of being powerful, exactly. as opposed to shame, which is negative.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we'll have much more to say about this topic, so stick around. Well, now it's time for From Here and There with my colleague Mahdi Golzadeh. He usually has many interesting pieces for us, sometimes articles, websites, medical revelations, or all sorts of interesting things. So let's see what he has for us today.
Thanks, Ms. Sarju. Well, the first article is on vegetables, the second on achievements by Iran, and the third is another breakthrough by Iran.
Great.
Well, hello, dear viewers. Welcome to this part of the program, From Here and There. Now, first of all, how can you maximize the nutritional content of vegetables? Sometimes cooking powers up the nutrients in some vegetables, and sometimes does the exact opposite in others. Now, the first one, asparagus, should be eaten cooked, as steaming it ignites its cancer-fighting potential. The second one is beets. They should be eaten raw, because beets lose more than 25% of their folate when cooked. Eating them raw will preserve this brain compound. Now, the third is broccoli. They should be eaten raw as well. Heating deactivates myrosinase, an enzyme in broccoli that helps cleanse the liver of carcinogens. Now, fourth, mushrooms, on the other hand, should be eaten cooked. Heating mushrooms, whether boil, grill, or roast them, brings out more muscle-building potassium. Number five, I know some can't, but onions should be eaten raw. Just slice and eat. You can get less of the hunger-busting phytonutrient allicin when you cook onions. Green peppers are better when eaten raw. The vitamin C breaks down when roasted, fried or grilled above 375 degrees. And last but not least, and a surprise for some, tomatoes should be eaten cooked. When you eat tomatoes cooked, your body absorbs more of the cancer-fighting lycopene. Welcome back. Now, Iran has launched the first umbilical cord blood bank in collaboration with Royan Research Institute in the Iraqi province of Erbil. Dr. Murtaza Zarabi, the head of Royan Stem Cell Technology Umbilical Cord Blood Bank, said that after the signing of the letter of understanding with Iraqi officials and getting the proper permits, Iran started to work with Jian International Hospital in Iraq for processing and storage of the umbilical cord blood in the new facility. Now, umbilical blood sampling of Iraqi children will be sent to Tehran for processing and preservation according to international standards. Royan Stem Cell Technology launched the office with the intention of providing stem cell knowledge to the neighboring Islamic countries. Now, umbilical cord blood is blood that remains in the placenta and is also in the attached umbilical cord after childbirth. Cord blood is collected because it contains stem cells, which can be used to treat genetic disorders. Now, the largest cross-city tunnel in Tehran with a length of 10,252 meters has been officially inaugurated. The Niyayesh tunnel is one of the world's 20 longest road tunnels, with the construction of the tunnel, which connects Tehran's east and west, starting in 2011. One of the distinguished features of this tunnel is application of modern technologies to such an extent that there is no parameter in Niyayesh tunnel which would not be under the control and management of integrated intelligent control systems. All the elements, including movement of vehicles, forecast of air pollution, environmental problems and accidents, are managed through the intelligent systems and have turned the tunnel into a unique one in the country. Well, that was it from me. I hope you enjoyed this part of the program from here and there. As usual, you can visit us at english.sahartv.ir, or you could also email us as well at purehome@sahartv.ir. You can call us directly on 0098-212216-2887 or 0098-212216-2854. Back to you, Ms. Akhju.
Thank you very much, Mr. Golzadeh. Kind of hard to understand. I was thinking, how do you eat beets raw? I think it would be quite difficult. But
some people do with salad, a bit of salt, pepper. You can do it.
Yeah, maybe if you cut it to really tiny pieces.
Raw. It's very difficult. But
you have to have pretty sharp teeth, but yeah. I think you can do it. Well, if you're supposed to do it, you should do it then. Thank you. This week, we'd like to take a look at a report about sports for the disabled. And many of these, but not all of them, are people who are war veterans. And it's very inspiring to take a look at how determined, strong, and persistent these teams and these disabled are. This week, we'd like to take a look at the men's team.
In the name of God, I am Muhammad Reza Mirshafi'i, a 70% disabled person. I got injured and disabled during the imposed war. I am the manager of this sports club, which belongs to the Foundation of Martyrs and Veterans Affairs of Tehran. I have been cooperating with this club and offering services to the disabled for 6 years now. In fact, we offer services and sports to the disabled and veterans and their families. We offer the following sports. We have shooting, aerobics, bodybuilding, and dart. Our teams participate in provincial, countrywide, and international competitions. And for men, we offer the following sports like shooting, weightlifting, Iranian traditional sport, and also darts. We have also started to offer disabled fencing recently. It is worth mentioning that we offer these services to the disabled for free. Female athletes practice here from 7 in the morning to 2:30, and male athletes practice from 2:30 to 9 in the afternoon. Mr. Ruhollah Rostami is one of the athletes of this club who won a silver medal in weightlifting in 2012 Paralympic Games. In the name of God, I am Ruhollah Rostami, and I was born in 1989 and I started playing sports in 2006. I entered the national team in 2008, and the first international competition I participated in was the US competitions, where I won the first place. I also won other international competitions. The last time I won a competition was in 2012 Paralympic Games, where I won the second place.
If you've just tuned in before the break, we spoke about how generations nowadays are stuck to this norm, this pluralistic ignorance that we spoke about, and now maybe some are rebelling against this conventions, these bad conventions, and we're here with Ms. Madani. And so we spoke about, we said basically a lot of people, it's bad to be the goody two-shoe, the good girl. Mm-hmm. And is the young generation rebelling against these bad conventions or not? And if yes, could you give some examples so we can better understand?
Well, the best way to prove that this rebellion is happening is first of all to go inside, you know, the Western society, because there is the hype of all this kind of, you know, immodesty. And because I've been there in my middle school and high school, and I see the results of how this immodesty has ruined everything, ruined the family. And in fact, in my class, there were so many students who did not have a family as a whole, and they told me, "Good for you that you have parents living in one house, all of you are together." And I was like, "This is just something normal for me, you know. It wasn't, you know, I wouldn't think of it as a blessing." Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I went there, I found out that I have so many blessings that I should thank God for. But In fact, another way is to hear it from the teenage tongue itself. I mean, just to have an interview with the teenagers, mm-hmm. and have it as a documentation. In fact, this is what Shalit has done. In she has two main books. One is A Return to Modesty, which was written before, and this one, Girls Gone Wild. The previous one is more about women, but this one is about more about the young generation, mm-hmm. coming back. And in fact, we see that in her interview with the teenagers, they point out some very interesting points. I mean, if we just for example, Muslim scholar says these things, people say, okay, these are religious things, religious, you know, teachings and everything. But when an American teenager talks about what she has lived and she has felt, yeah, exactly. I think this touches, you know, the other teenagers in other parts of the world. For example, we see Audrey, an American teenager. She says, when Shalit asks about fashion and everything, she patiently explains, the trendy stuff gets in the way of my identity. With the trashy stuff, you're wanting to show everybody how good your body is instead of how you are on the inside. I think it's much better to dress modest so you don't distract other people. And when the girls talk about distracting others, I would learn, this is Shalit. Shalit says, I would learn they don't mean what many people might assume, leading men into sin or something. Rather, they don't want people to be distracted from their personalities, from their true personalities. So, and there is a pure fashion, pure fashion program in America, which has started from 1999, and it's a program in which the young teenagers, they go to different high schools, and there is a pure fashion thing going on. With modest clothing, they introduce modest clothing, mm-hmm, and so also they have some classes about etiquette. And it's interesting that every year the audience is just increasing. Mm-hmm. And in fact, sometimes they don't have enough place for the people who have the tickets. Mm. And for example, one of the people who is in charge of this is a teenager called Taylor. for example, she goes to the students and says, just imagine, you know, she talks with the language of the young, with the language of the teenagers. She says, imagine, for example, a very handsome, he talks to the girls and says, imagine a handsome guy coming to you, and to the girls, to the boys, you know, one of your favorite, for example, actors, actresses or something. And everybody is like, ooh, and then she names some of the actors and actresses. And she says, now imagine that you have got your payment, and this guy or this girl tells you that you have to give me your ATM card. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, no, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on and says, so how would you agree to offer your body to somebody who you know you're not emotionally attached to, but you are not going, you don't give them money, but you just offer your body as, you know, as something
which priceless. Is probably, yeah, a much higher price.
Exactly. And then we see other teenagers, for example, the others, they go on to say that the way you dress is has some vibes. In other words, it has some reflections, and it shows others how to act with you, how to react. Mm-hmm. And
so basically, it tells you something about yourself.
Exactly. And
so I think also, for a lot of young people, it might be not only the return to modesty, but for a lot of people, it's a lot of pressure, feeling that they need to conform to a certain body shape, to cut in a certain way. They might not want to dress in that, I guess you said, the trashy form, just because they need to lose weight, they need to look a certain way. So there's a pressure from another angle, too.
Exactly. And this... we see that this beauty surgery thing is going on. Is it the right word, beauty surgery?
Plastic surgery or cosmetic surgery.
And it's interesting that Charlotte points out in the book that, in fact, I didn't want to say it, but now that you mentioned it, it says that manufacturers of breast implants may claim that plastic surgery boosts self-esteem or other kinds of, you know, beauty surgeries. But if anything, the evidence seems to point the other way. Women who have had breast implants are actually 21% more likely to commit suicide.
Wow.
Than women without implants. It could be that the operation attracts women who already have low self-esteem, but the implants don't seem to be helping much. In other words, Charlotte comes to an important point. She says that people who go after, you know, fashion and implants and these things, the problem is a root problem. They have low self-esteem.
Of course, I think it's quite logical. I mean, if we go to the root of the problem, we understand that if you have, if you're powerful enough to appreciate yourself, appreciate your values, your modesty, who you are inside, then you don't feel the need to go out and get something like that so invasive, so dangerous, done to conform to what society expects of you to
and
get that intention.
Yeah, she points out to I think, a nice point, and says that you see so many people looking the same in the society because they all have, like, you know, the plastic surgeries and everything, and they just want to follow the same role models in, you know, on the films and everything. So you see that everyone is putting up the same kind of makeups, the same kind of, you know, and it's just very important that we should not go after this kind of, you know, norm. And as one of the...
mainstream, just following without knowing.
Yeah. I think many of our international viewers don't know Mr. Hajar Dulabi. He is he was an Islamic scholar. And he said that norm has become so important for people that it's kind of another religion. And people sometimes, you know, just count it higher than the religion of God. And it's
what they obey and what they practice.
And interesting, they say we don't, like, go after religion because it limits us. But the point is that, and Charlotte also explains it in the book, that this pressure of fashion, of this pressure of all these kinds of you know, the norm that we want to just stick ourselves to, is much more than the just some of the limits which religion puts for us, which is inside, you know, you know, in the Quran it says إنما على الأسرة يسرى, إنما على الأسرة يسرى, not بعد الأسرة يسرى. In other words, easiness, you know, comfort is along with those things which we might feel, you know, as restraint. And also there's another verse which I really loved from my childhood. It says أسوأ أن تحبوا شيئا وهو شر لكم, أسوأ أن تكرهوا شيئا وهو خير لكم. You know, and the meaning is just you know, sometimes you like something but it's not good for you. Sometimes you don't like something but it's good for you. And God, you know, Allah is the only one who knows what is good and what is bad for you.
He knows best. Well, I think the takeaway here is dare to be different, dare to be good. Right,
exactly.
I think.
And sorry, just one other point. And this, attracting the attention of others, you know, this is very important. For example, Shali says these people who are like this, they are so totally dependent on others' opinions about their bodies. This is also another, you know, another outcome of that low self-esteem.
Definitely. Well, we'll definitely want to know how we can empower ourselves to avoid this. But we'll go for a break, and when we come back, it's time for our book.
Hello.
Allah, our book is Dutifulness to Parents in Light of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah, and it's by Nitham Sakija. Now, this book guides mankind, and especially Muslims, on how to bestow love, behave, and serve parents based strictly on the original texts, the Quran and the Sunnah, quite succinctly. Now, while talking about rights of the parents, the author has also drawn attention towards the duties of the parents, too. Before we continue with our discussion, we have an email from one of our very loyal viewers. This is from Jamilu, and she says, Assalam, dear presenter, I will always pause on Sundays to watch your program, which I find always educating and fascinating. Please keep up the good work. May Allah help you. And she is writing us from Nigeria. Thank you so much, Jamila. We hope that we can continue to offer informative, interesting programs. Give us your comments. Tell us if you'd like to see anything that we don't have in our programs. We'd like to take those into consideration. And we hope that we can continue to excite and interest you. Okay, well, continuing on, Ms. Madani, so we've talked about these norms and how constricting and honestly how terrible these norms are. So now what's the best way to empower ourselves and our children against this modern ignorance?
In fact, there's several reasons for this self-esteem, this low self-esteem we're talking about. I just want to mention that our children have been taught that everything is good, there is nothing bad, you know, you can choose whatever you want. And on the other hand, our parents are taught that if you advise, you know, nowadays, not before, if you just give advice to your children, you're imposing something, it may have bad effects. And so we see that children are somehow just stuck in a in an isolation, and this isolation is in fact being is increasing because of the parallel world they're living in. I mean, on one hand we see that the parents are not coming to help the children, mm-hmm. because we might not have time, I'm not going to read the surveys which Shalit has brought in her book about how high school children they're unhappy about how their parents are not looking at them as children. In other words, they say that we're left alone and we want our parents to have more control over us, to see where we are at night. And it's interesting, there are different surveys. If you want, anyone who wants, they can, you know, get the book and read the surveys. Mm-hmm. And in fact, this, in other words, one of the reasons is this parallel world in which our children are living in. And also this, one was the isolation caused by the parents, and another is the isolation caused by the cyber world, the mm-hmm. internet, and also, you know, the mobile and all this new technology is the films, the animations. We see that our children are living in another world. Mm-hmm. And
they're being left alone to fend for themselves in this dangerous world.
In the fantasy world. And nowadays there are games in which the avatars are, you know, playing with each mm-hmm. other. In other words, the real self, as we said, is really lost. Mm-hmm. For example, we see some people who are friends on the internet, they don't really know each other. They're just friends mm-hmm. with each other's you know,
virtually.
Yeah, virtual experience and virtual identity. And in fact, this parallel world, why? There are several reasons that children go to this parallel world. First, it is because of the isolation. Second is because they are alone. They're alone physically. Why? Because nowadays mothers don't have more than one child. Even one is, you know, one of my friends was planning for the third child, and she said, everybody is like telling me, did you want it yourself? Is it here by your own
accident?
Or was it by accident? And she was like, I didn't think that if I do this, it's like, you know, committing a crime. And I was in a conference, a Hollywoodism conference, just a few weeks ago, and there were two French ladies. They had one of them had come with four, you know, several of her children, and she said, I have four children, and the other one also, she said, I have four children, and she said one of them had, she was a filmmaker, and she said that I have, I feel that the Western woman is committing suicide by not having children, and by committing herself only to work. And
I think even that one child they don't have time for. Exactly. Even that one child ends up going to daycare.
Yeah, exactly. And she was like, I myself tell my children to have more, you know, more and more, because, and as you know, on the news you hear that nowadays children, they don't have aunts, uncles, they don't have, you know, this, before the grandparents, they saw their granddaughters, grandchildren going out playing with so many children. Nowadays we see that, you know, the streets are empty, there are no children there. And I think one of the important cures is that how we can increase the self-esteem in our children is to make them believe in the other, the real other world. In my thesis, Harry Potter, it was about how why Harry Potter is, and you know, fantastic works like Harry Potter are gaining so much popularity in the modern world. It's because the real parallel world is lost. The world of God, the angels, you know, these, we don't teach our children about angels. We don't teach them that, you know, for example, when I was a child, my mother always said, there's an angel here, there's one here. This one, you know, writes your good deeds. This one writes your bad deeds. And I, instead of fantasy, I used to talk with them. I would like say, please write, don't write the bad things, just wait, I'm going to forgive you.
So go back to your origins. So basically that's how we can empower ourselves, is to go back to those origins, God, the angels, that spiritual life, as opposed to this virtual and these bad conventions. Thank you so much, Ms. Madani. And to our dear viewers, thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, go on our website, sahartv.ir, and watch our program. Don't forget to send us comments, peerhome@sahartv.ir. Thanks so much for inviting us into your peer home. Until next time, goodbye and God bless.